let's leave the floor now to Harriet.
Thank you. Well, the floor is going to be mostly David this afternoon, but the reason I wanted to give this talk was really to set out a record of what I remember of the beginning of the North London Hospice, given that I'm probably about the only person still around who was around then. And a book may or may not be produced about the hospice. And as I say, I just really wanted to set out a record somewhere. So this PowerPoint is on a flash drive, which I'm giving to the archive here, and I'm giving a copy to the hospice as well. And so for as long as flash drives work, which may not be for very long, it can be accessed if anybody wants to. Some of you may remember that I was due to give this talk a year ago, and in the intervening time I had to have some mouth surgery, hence the fact that my speech is not very clear for you to hear and not all that easy for me to speak for any length of time. So David, who is the second longest person around to remember the hospice and who was my great support from relatively early on, has very kindly agreed to be my support today and my voice. I'm happy to chip in at times, and I'll probably chip in when we get to the questions. The PowerPoint slides are actually mine, and Mick very kindly digitised them all for me from the 35mm format which they were in, and the work, the dialogue is mostly mine with some of David's additions. So I shall hand over to David. Thank you.
Thank you, Harriet. Can everyone hear okay? Well, dear members of Finchley Society, friends who've come along, it's great to see so many of you, and I recognise some of you, some of my old colleagues from the first home care service here, North London Hospice Home Care Service, some of the current members of the North London Hospice, other people I've met from church and in other places, the East Finchley Methodist Church concerts, which are always lovely. I'm not sure if you talk to people in the Finchley Society who live in New Barnet, but good to see you. Even a member of my gym who I've never ever seen with clothes on before. And I was just thinking, as I walked in, we weren't sure how many people were going to turn up, and that interesting story that some of you will be very familiar with of the speaker who was invited to give a one-hour talk and got to the venue, lovely room like this, and there was only one person sitting there, and he thought, well, I'll go ahead and give the talk as I've been asked to do it, I've prepared it, and I'm being paid pretty well. So he gave the lecture for the whole hour, and he started to pack up his papers and put his coat on. When the one man said, please, sir, don't go yet. I'm the other speaker. And I was thinking how awful it would be if Harriet and I were the only two here spending this time talking to each other. So great to see you all. Thank you for coming. So you've got two for the price of one today, and a great opportunity, Harriet, to work with you, unexpected opportunity to work with you again. So I'm going to read out Harriet's words. She's done all the hard work of putting this presentation together and preparing the text. So I don't usually read, but to be faithful to Harriet's the one who's really got the history. So I'm going to stick to the text. So the presentation is really about the 20 years or so before the building in Woodside Avenue, the North London Hospice, was actually erected. And we're going to be using the words hospice care and palliative care rather interchangeably. And the main areas of hospice and palliative care considered home care, which we'll be saying a little bit more about, inpatient care, beds, bereavement care and teaching. And nowadays we'd certainly add the word research and also daycare. We want to set the North London Hospice within the overall development of palliative care at that time in 1973. There were very few modern hospices in the UK and none in the rest of the world. In fact, most of these on the map had not been available for long or were not fully functioning. So jumping to 1983, the picture had changed quite significantly as what's been known as the hospice movement spread throughout the country. This is Dame Cicely Saunders, the founder of the modern hospice movement. She initially trained first as a nurse, then as a social worker, and finally as a doctor, because she realized the only way she could help with pain and other problems for dying patients was to be able to challenge the medical profession as an equal and also be able to prescribe appropriate medications as she wanted to. A senior consultant told Cicely Saunders, "It's the doctors who abandon the dying, and if you want to do this properly, you really do need to train as a doctor yourself." In the 1950s, Dame Cicely worked at St. Joseph's Hospice in Hackney, where the Sisters of Charity cared for dying patients and helped relieve pain by giving an oral morphine mixture known as the Brompton cocktail, which originated at the Brompton Hospital. Gradually, the drug regimes were changed and improved upon, as well as medication to help other symptoms, and pharmacologists and drug companies began to take an interest in some of these problems and develop new drug formulations. So the world, the medical world, was changing. This is St. Christopher's Hospice in Sydenham, southeast London, where I happened to work for the last 13 years before I retired, which was established by Dame Cicely Saunders in 1967, where as medical director she was able to engage in developing all the elements of hospice and palliative care that we know today. This meant not just working to refine medication, but also to care emotionally and spiritually for the patient and the family. What we call total care, which was seldom practiced in those days. It meant finding out what the patient wanted and needed and trying to meet those needs, and the whole concept of working in a multidisciplinary team involving nurses, social workers, psychotherapists, psychologists, physiotherapists, clergy, etc. And that was becoming the norm in specialist hospice and palliative care. Just to say, we often think it as hospice as not just a building, however important a building is, but as a team approach, as a team working in different settings. A kind of hospice without walls, you might say. This is a site in New Haven, Connecticut, in the US, around 1973. Dr. Sylvia Lack, a protege of Dame Cicely, was headhunted by a small group, and she established the first hospice care in the USA, without any inpatient beds, working with patients and families in their own homes. Within a few years, the concept of palliative care spread rapidly across America by enthusiastic voluntary groups. Back in the UK, 1978, Dr. Thelma Bates, a consultant radiotherapist, and Sister Barbara Saunders established the first, what was called, hospital support team, and these eventually spread around the country. This meant patients were visited on the wards and seen in outpatients as part of the NHS system, rather than the mainly voluntary funded hospice teams that had developed. It also meant that much more involvement in student education across the spectrum and close interaction with pharmacy departments. So we're in 1983 again. A number of different services are available. If you divide the city into quadrants, the north, northeast had St. Joseph's Hospice in Hackney, St. Christopher's in Sydenham provided care for the south, southeast, and Trinity Hospice in Clapham was accessed by those in the south, southwest area. In theory, there was hospice provision for the north, northwest, but in reality, at the time it was provided, by what is Marie Curie, Hampstead, but then was run by a local GP who didn't have specialist knowledge of hospice care, and it ran basically as a nursing home. Thus there was a glaring gap in the availability of hospice care for approximately 750,000 people here in Barnet, Enfield and Haringey. Around 1981, the Hampstead Community Health Council set up a subcommittee to look at palliative care needs of Hampstead Health Authority, which included Dr. Chris Hindley, a Highgate GP, with an interest in the topic. Harriet Copperman, at that time nursing director of the home care service at St. Joseph's Hospice, was invited to join the subcommittee. After several months, the health authority decided to establish a hospital support team, which would visit patients in the community, as well as carry out the hospital work already described at St. Thomas's. However, the subcommittee felt that this didn't address the needs for Barnet, Enfield and Haringey, and during a meeting it was decided that a new hospice group should be established to fill that gap for Inner London. So the question was, what was it to be called? Being a multi-faith area, it was agreed that it should not be named after a saint, as had been traditional for many hospices, but somebody suggested that it should be called the North London Hospice. And here we are, which described the geographical area, and here we are 37 years or so later, still called the North London Hospice. Great.
Because we wondered if we would get a benefactor giving us millions of pounds to call the hospice after that person, but it never happened. Mm-hmm. So that's the name, and it stuck.
Yeah. Great. So here's that subcommittee. We have Dr. Chris Hindley back left as chairman, August 1981. The first meetings were held in the crypt of Hampstead Church, bottom right, Reverend Graham Dowell, with Geoffrey Upton back right as our treasurer, and Susan Lewis, middle front, as on sec. John Bauer, a solicitor, joined the group, and we were on our way with some of the legal formalities, such as preparing the Mem and Arts and registering as a charity, which was formally named the North London Hospice Group, and a bank account opened, although at that time we had no funds at all. So the main priorities at this stage were to find a site and to start fundraising. Oh, this is of interest to the North London Hospice fundraising team, the current team in particular. As many of you know, finding a suitable site in such a built-up and expensive part of London was quite a struggle and took many, many years. No large greenfield site for us generously donated by a grateful borough council, as had happened in so many different parts of the UK. Our first thoughts were for the Queen Mary Hospital site, an unused part of the Royal Free Hospital just opposite Whitestone Pond. This was soon discarded, and our focus turned to Broadlands, the Whittington home in this picture, a beautiful old building in the heart of Highgate. Architects were consulted about the feasibility of conversion. Then it was decided it would need to be demolished, and finally the projected costs appeared far too great. And in the end, the site was bought, and the private Highgate Hospital now occupies that site. Over the next few years, the committee changed considerably. Dr. Hindley stepped down as chairman, and Elsa Perkins took over. Rabbi, now Baroness Julia Neuberger, very familiar to many of us, contacted the group about the intention of the Jewish community to establish a palliative care service. This would probably have meant increasing difficulties in fundraising for the North London Hospice, and fortunately, it was decided to pool our efforts and be the first hospice to cater in all senses, specifically as a multi-faith hospice. aiming to meet the needs particularly of the Christian, Jewish and Muslim communities. Baroness Neuberger helped and supported us for many years, and Melvin Carlo, Chief Executive of Jewish Care, became Chairman of our Premises Committee and made available their extensive knowledge of acquiring and building care homes. Dame Albertine Winner, she was head of healthcare in the department, government level, and I think she interviewed me as well for my job at the North London Hospice. And she was chairman of St Christopher's Hospice as well. She chaired our profession of subcommittee for the early years. And Norman Saval, who gave his services generously as honorary treasurer. So, with the knowledge and expertise and goodwill of these valuable people, a number of wilderness years were spent scouring the area for a site. Some of you who've done that will know how exciting yet time-consuming that whole process is. And the sites included the old Queen Square Hospital site by East Finchley Station, now the Archer Academy School, land at the old Frean Psychiatric Hospital, which was well situated at the edge of the three boroughs and near a railway station and buses, and the Finchley Memorial Hospital site, as well as those mentioned earlier. Until after 6 years, this site was finally acquired in 1987. However, given that establishing and running a domiciliary hospice service required relatively little funding or premises, it was agreed that Harriet Copperman be permitted to do so. With that end in mind, she applied for one of the new positions at the Royal Free Hospital, as that would be the main teaching hospital serving the three boroughs and useful to establish relationships with staff there, and those professional relationships, as you know, are quite crucial. She had been contacted by Dame Cicely Saunders herself, who had been told that Help the Aged were prepared to fund 1 year's salary for a nurse to set up a new service, and they duly agreed to provide the first funds for the hospice, £10,000, to pay that salary. So, we're 1 year. What an act of faith, Harriet. So here we have them, the 3 degrees, the nurses at the Royal Free, and no prizes for guessing if you can spot Harriet Copperman. And those are the days with, I always tease the nurses and say, they were proper nurses with proper uniforms on. And did you enjoy wearing your hat?
Oh, definitely.
This plan worked out very well. On the left is Dr. Maggie Marshall, at that time a radiotherapy registrar, but who agreed to join us as our first part-time doctor, while her colleague, Dr. Adrian Tookman, subsequently became and still is medical director of Marie Curie Hampstead, and he helped play a part in our early years, and he was really terrific to have a senior consultant there at Marie Curie and the Royal Free, and he's been really, really supportive. Thank you, Adrian. So, going on with our story, after about 18 months at the Royal Free, and with the promise of just 1 year's salary, and an unexpected offer of financial support from someone already known for the help he gave to the team at St. Joseph's, the North London Hospice Home Care Service started in March 1984 from the somewhat infamous spare room in Harriet's upstairs flat in Muswell Hill, as there was no office space available and no money for rent anyway. In June 1984, a lot of preparatory work, meeting GPs and district nurses, etc., and employing one more nurse and a secretary, we started taking our first referrals. That first year, Harriet writes, was intensely hard work, but produced very encouraging results. Of more than 100 patients, this is really important, and other teams I've worked with subsequently have taken a year to produce what Harriet and the existing team produced in a few months. Of more than 100 patients we had referred to us in the first year in Barnet and Haringey, we didn't have enough staff to cover Enfield at that point as well. 100 of them died, 70% of them in their own homes, which was quite an achievement, which was a reversal of national statistics. I can't tell you how important that is, and to help people remain in their own homes, which generally surveys show that most people want to be at the end of their lives in their own beds. So the main emphasis was on home care, because given a choice, the majority of people would prefer to die in their own home. And the comfort and security, Harriet writes, of the patient's own bed, and his wife, who shared everything with him from the previous 50 years or so and knows exactly how he likes his tea, and without even him having to ask, and providing companionship, and then his wife being able to get into bed with him. Can't easily do that in hospital. So Harriet's generously shared with us two examples of her patients. So that's the fella, with the companionship of his best friend Doggy and his wife, and the, you know, the picture with symptoms controlled, with support, and good communication. That's what we call total care, the holistic care. So, you know, when good care, physical, but also social, emotional, spiritual. And there's another picture, Harriet, when she constructed the presentation, it was great. She put this picture of one of her patients, Harriet having made her comfortable. That's really very much at the end of her life, and that's where she wanted to be, tucked up in her own bed. Thanks for sharing all these. Actually my first day at work now. I hope I don't frighten you looking like that. I do tell my grandchildren, you know, it's this hospice work has given me white hair, you know. By the end of our first year, we were seriously running out of space, and fortunately the downstairs masonette became available for a minimal rent. So with donated curtains and flooring and the place painted by youngsters doing community service, we moved downstairs, where we had three rooms of offices, the bath in the bathhouse for storing nursing equipment, and we whitewashed the coal shed to contain other equipment. David Olivier, our first social work director, arrived on his first day to clean out the rubbish with the help of for the whole team. So here we have Carol, who's here in the second row. You got, must, at break time, say hello to Carol. We just couldn't have done it without you, Carol. And two nurses, two of the home care nurses. Those were the days. Those next few years were still fondly remembered by some round the table. We were free to work in a professional manner, but without the bureaucratic constraints that appear to stress and demotivate so many in healthcare today, and for all professions. Thus, weather permitting, our clinical meetings were held in pleasant garden surroundings rather than some uninspiring windowless office space so prevalent these days. And I can't help but embarrass them and introduce Bridget here, who's also in the second row, colleague nurse, Maura, myself, Margie, and so on, Stu, and Carol again, and Maggie, our doctor. And the main criterion for anyone to work in the team, of course, that they had to be very good looking. The staff are expanding.
Yes, I just wanted to speak to this slide because we were once more, after another year or so, running out of space and with no, as ever, no money. We were somewhat limited as to what we could do. And this is actually the team outside some offices in Ballard's Lane, which is the house right next to where Waitrose is now. It's a carpet place. Why I particularly wanted to mention this, well, it gave us the opportunity. We had a fundraising team, an administrator, and the home care service was expanding as well. And moving in here meant that we could actually all be under one roof for the first time. But this roof was supplied by Kurt Weinberg. He owned this house at the time, and he said he gave us the ground floor rent-free for as long as we needed it. And we were actually there for about 3 years until the hospice opened. So that is my tribute to Kurt, because he really helped us at a very difficult time.
Thank you, Harriet. Hear, hear to Kurt and Charlotte. Quite an extraordinary couple. At times, Maggie, myself, and Harriet had to be on our best behavior and dress up for special occasions, be it fundraising or speaking. This was attended by Mrs. Margaret Thatcher, our local MP and first patron of the North London Hospice and guest of honour on this particular open garden occasion. So eventually this turned into this in 1992, when the first patients arrived, and then eventually to 1994, it was this, and Her Majesty the Queen arrived to formally open the building. What a lovely building and success story, and Harriet is writing in the notes, I'm going to read them out, apologies for this photo, Harriet says. We each received a photo of ourselves being presented, so this was the only one available to me. Also in the picture is Dr. Louis Friedman, chairman of the North London Hospice, Penny Montgomery, late Penny Montgomery, our administrator, and on the right, Dr. Chris Baxter, who's the current medical director of the North London Hospice. So that is the story, and there'll be ample time for you to come back with questions and points you'd like to make. I know some of you, sadly, had direct experience of getting care or loved ones getting care at the North London Hospice. And I just like to finish by saying that, you know, this idea of hospice without walls or the hospice approach is really important. Yes, the beds are really important. It can happen there, the team approach, in daycare, in hospitals, now, increasingly, over the last few years, in care homes. And Harriet's helped turn the idea, the vision, into the reality of hospice care. And I just want to round off myself by my favourite phrase from Cicely Saunders, which exemplifies the work that's been done and the approach, And she said, you matter because you are you, and you matter to the last moment of your life. Thank you.